Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Dr. Christy Belden, a neuropsychologist and the Associate Director of Banner Sun Health Research Institute and Director of the Neuropsychology Center at Banner Sun Health Research Institute. And we will be discussing compensatory strategies for memory and thinking. You know, Janice, compensatory strategies are something that we use every day, whether we label it that or not. Just as we were preparing for the conversation today and we were coming up with a to-do list and taking notes of afterwards, I need to follow up on this. Well, we were concerned that our memory wasn't going to hold on to that, so we made a note of it. Compensatory strategies are just really trying to make life a little bit easier through modifications to our behavior or our environment. I think back to previous episodes on Dementia Untangled, especially when we talk to people who are living with dementia, they often had really creative strategies that they were employing. In particular, Roger Marple talked to us about his love for Alexa. He could just say out loud, "Alexa, set a reminder for this appointment." We talked to Lori Scherer just last season, and she shared about how she rehomes all of her items in her pantry into clear containers so she can see what's inside of them. She labels them, so it's very easy for her to open and see exactly what she needs. Another woman that we do a lot of work with, Sharon, shared that she loves to cook. And while she's in the kitchen, she's concerned about remembering that something's in there. And so she actually started putting a flashing bike light in the kitchen while something's in the oven. And that just visually will catch her eye and call her attention to it. You know, it's really remarkable. I think of all the work that we do with support groups, and these are a wealth of compensatory strategies. These may seem simple and even minor, but they have a much larger impact for the person living with dementia and those who care about them. This is really about purpose. This is about maintaining function, even as the disease progresses.
Oh, Heather, thank you so much for reminding me of those stories. And I love hearing about the creative compensatory strategies that people living with dementia have come up with for themselves. And I'm looking forward to finding out more. These strategies really do empower people to be independent longer, to continue contributing, to build purpose and resilience, and to help find joy in the midst of the dementia journey, because dementia affects so much more than memory, and there's so much more than sticky note reminders to help. Recently at our Banner Sun Health Research Institute Health and Aging Expo, Dr. Belden's compensatory strategies table was so popular because it's like you said, Heather, we use these strategies every day. And I'm so looking forward to this conversation.
Welcome, Dr. Belden. Thank you so much for joining the conversation today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Before we dive into compensatory strategies, I want to learn a little bit more about you. Could you tell us about your journey and what led you to connect with the dementia community?
Sure. You know, it actually starts quite a ways back when I graduated from my undergraduate program, which was in cultural anthropology, not psychology, came home from college and really was just looking. I didn't know what was next. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. And I took a summer job There was somebody who was a snowbird in the office at a retirement community here in Sun City, and they needed somebody to cover for the summer while she went back home. And so I took this job, and it was the first time I had ever worked with older adults. And I realized how much I enjoyed it. I worked in the office, and people would kind of flow in and out throughout the day with different needs, and I'd get to help them. And I was just kind of drawn naturally to an older adult population. So that was kind of the first inkling I ever had that I would work with older adults. It wasn't until I was in graduate school that I was exposed to neuropsychology. I knew I wanted to do something in the realm of health psychology, helping people to live healthier. And then basically, I just had a friend ask me if I would take this neuropsychology course because she was trying to get the training director to offer it as an elective. And I thought, well, that seems interesting. And so I took the neuropsych course and found a love and a way to pair my interest in working with older adults and in health management. And they married very nicely. So I guess it was kind of happenstance and openness to new experience that led me on the path that I've been on.
I love to hear that story. And I find in these conversations, there's a few people who kind of from day one knew that they wanted to work with older adults, but the vast majority, we just kind of, like you said, happenstance kind of nudged us in that direction. You mentioned the term neuropsychology. And I didn't know what a neuropsychologist was until I came to Banner Alzheimer's Institute. Could you tell our listeners, what is neuropsychology?
Neuropsychology is the study of and expertise in brain behavior relationships. So to back up just a little bit, I'm a clinical psychologist, so doctorally trained as a clinical psychologist. And then to practice as a neuropsychologist, you do an additional 2-year postdoctoral fellowship to specialize in the area of neuropsychology. I, in particular, specialized in older adults. I actually completed my postdoctoral fellowship here at the Banner Sun Health Research Institute. So I got super specialized training in working in dementias and cognitive disorders and Parkinson's disease and other movement disorders. But basically, we are experts in the types of evaluations that help us to determine areas of strength and weakness in terms of memory and thinking, and what particular area of the brain might be impacted based on performance on those assessments.
We love hearing about science and hearing about your background. That is absolutely amazing. And I want to know if you can just share with us a little bit more. Some people might be asking, what is a compensatory strategy? And what does that even mean?
Sure. So I think Heather did a really nice job of really emphasizing some of the things that we're all doing. So compensatory strategies, those are basically the ways that we cope in daily life with things that maybe aren't necessarily our strengths. And so when I say that, anyone, all of us are using compensatory strategies all of the time. As Heather alluded to, you know, when you're creating that to-do list because you've got a big event coming up and you want to make sure that you don't forget anything, follow up for those things. What do I need to order? That to-do list, that task list, that's a compensatory strategy because we have so much happening for us in our daily lives. We can't possibly keep it all in our heads. It would be very, it's not impossible, but for the most part, that would be very difficult. So compensatory strategies are all of these little tips, tricks, and tools that we use in daily life to make life flow for ourselves. We mentioned it, we were talking about neuropsychology, and one of the things that we always tell our patients is that when we do a neuropsychological evaluation, we're trying to determine where someone exists on a cognitive spectrum. At one end of the spectrum, you have just normal age-related change. Our brain is aging just like the rest of us. And just like the rest of our body has changes as we age, so too does our brain. And so even someone who's in that cognitively normal aging space there's still going to be some changes that might make it so that we need to use some strategies to stay efficient in daily life. And just as an aside, I'll add the rest of that spectrum, as we move away from normal age-related change, we get into this area we call mild cognitive impairment. And that is where someone is experiencing difficulties in memory and or thinking, but it's really not impacting their independence in daily life. These compensatory strategies work for them, and so they can maintain their independence. And then as we move along from that, we get into the area of dementia, and that's where we're seeing significant difficulties in memory and thinking, and it's impacting their daily life. So these compensatory strategies aren't quite as helpful any longer, and so their functional change is more advanced, and so they may be relying on the assistance of others even more so to maintain their daily life activities. So I say all of that to say we're all using compensatory strategies no matter where we are on that cognitive spectrum. So I would encourage anyone listening today who's just curious and really doesn't have any difficulties to consider use of some of these things, because they can definitely make life easier, and who doesn't want that?
I definitely want that. So I'm looking forward to learning from you today, Dr. Belden. Before we learn what does work, though, I wonder if there are maybe some strategies that are well-meaning, but maybe don't work as a compensatory strategy.
If you have someone, I guess, providing reminders that aren't helpful. So if someone is struggling with their memory, for instance, and you say, "Remember, we talked about this yesterday," that person doesn't remember. So that reminder of their lack of remembering can be hard to sit with and can cause some frustration. So those strategies of reminders are good, but we want to be thoughtful about how we provide those reminders. So rather than telling someone, "Well, don't you remember we talked about that yesterday?" Maybe rather than that, we use note boards on the refrigerator with notes that the person can reference, so they don't have to ask again, or more reliance on calendars, so they don't have to ask the details of that appointment that's coming up. So that would be one thing that can be difficult as a care partner. It's hard not to kind of reflexively provide that reminder. So having in place some strategies before the reminder even needs to occur can be helpful.
I love that we started with what doesn't work. I have been so empowered by listening to you and your team members share about what does work. Already in the podcast, I just feel that people can sense this focus on what they can do. Can you talk more about that and how you share that mindset with people living with dementia?
Sure. So as part of the neuropsychological evaluation, we've done the assessments, we've looked at all the different areas of brain function, and we've determined where they think they exist on that spectrum that we talked about, normal aging versus MCI versus dementia. And we're a part of the team that helps to try to determine what's causing the cognitive change. And that's really important to provide those answers for people. We also, though, in our reports provide recommendations for what someone should do next. What's the next step? So for some things that might be, you really need to get your hearing checked, because if we're not optimizing our sensory abilities, then we can't necessarily fully optimize our cognition. So there's some recommendations like that. But the other thing that we do is we've actually created a worksheet that we give to people, and it's actually called Compensatory Strategies for Everyday Life. And what we've done is we've separated out the different areas of memory and thinking. So you have attention and concentration, memory, language, problem solving and reasoning skills, our visual spatial skills, processing speed. We kind of separated all of this out, and we provided helpful strategies for each of those. So as an example, if somebody, we notice that somebody is having a real difficulty with attention on our testing, and if we aren't paying attention well, if we're distracted, that can certainly impact other areas of thinking like memory. So these aren't going to feel necessarily earth-shaking, but they're good reminders for people that if you're struggling with your attention, you want to limit background noise. turn off the TV, go to a quiet room when you're doing something that really requires your focus and concentration. A tricky one, avoiding multitasking. The world does not come at us one thing at a time, so it's almost impossible to not multitask, but we can give it our best shot. You know what? I'm going to do this thing right now in this quiet space, and I'm going to get this done before I move on to anything else. So that might be something we would offer for attention and concentration. You know, for difficulty learning new things, you know, we tend to think of memory as our ability to recall information, and that's true. But memory actually has phases. And initially, we have to learn information to be able to recall it later on. And so sometimes people can actually recall things pretty well if they can get it into their memory stores in the first place. So it might be learning that they're struggling with more so than recall. And if we pick up on something like that, we might say, one, here's where you're struggling. Even just clarifying for people where they're struggling in terms of their memory function can be a relief. And then we can help them to give themselves a little bit of grace. Just realize that your learning ability is inefficient. So you're going to need more repetition. And whether that's through writing notes, saying it out loud, repeating back to people, using mnemonic strategies or visual imagery, those are some things we'll talk about. So we have this list that goes through all of those cognitive functions that gives people examples of things that they can do in terms of their approach to daily life tasks. And then we actually highlight, we give everybody the entire sheet because it's chock full of great recommendations, even if you're not having difficulties. But we highlight the areas on our assessment where we saw difficulty so that they know where to focus their most of their attention in terms of employing compensatory strategies in daily life.
It's really interesting how you're able to dive in deeper and look beyond just memory and understand that actually the issue isn't specifically memory. It could be learning or it could be attention. So I think focusing on what the person can do is hugely important, but then along those same lines, I'm wondering about the importance of enjoyment of the activity. And you know, when I think of like diets or exercise, a lot of times it feels like not the fun version is the one you're supposed to do. Limit, you know, these foods that you love to stay on this certain diet or do this exercise that maybe isn't your favorite. And I remember talking to one of our other providers, Dr. Dave Ashish, about some of the programs that we offer. And he reminded me that there is a therapeutic value to fun. What great news. Can you tell us more about that?
So a part of those recommendations that I mentioned, we provide a lot of suggestions for things that just simply help to maintain brain health. We want to keep people where they are. We don't want progression of cognitive symptoms or even improve. And so we will recommend mental exercise, cognitive exercise. And that is very important to brain health. However, there is that tricky balance that you've alluded to. And so I will generally tell people when we give this recommendation that you don't have to learn a new language. If you want to, fantastic. What a wonderful way to exercise and stretch your brain and make it work in new and different ways. But you don't want to do something that you're either not interested in or that is so difficult that the level of frustration is so great that it cancels out any benefit you're getting from the activity. So enjoyment is definitely very important. Something that's interesting, and then you wanna kind of don't jump to the most complex maybe form of that thing. Maybe you let yourself be a beginner and grow your skill set so that you build that frustration tolerance as you're learning something new. That's very important, the enjoyment aspect for sure.
Such excellent advice. When you were sharing about the progression of dementia, what role does awareness or lack of awareness play in the ability to use those compensatory strategies?
It definitely has an impact. You know, if we are unaware, and a lack of awareness is a component of some forms of dementia. So if we are unaware or lack an appreciation of the changes we've experienced in terms of thinking, it can be very difficult then to even realize the need to employ a strategy. So, you know, if somebody who's cognitively well, obviously, and even in the MCI stage can retain awareness and understand that, okay, I'm struggling with this, so I'm going to try this thing to make this easier for myself. As people become demented, the care partner relationship becomes even kind of more important in this, because it may be a care partner, a family member, a friend, or a caregiver who helps to employ these strategies kind of as a partner in the process for someone who maybe can't initiate it for themselves.
Okay, Dr. Belden, I feel like we've been beating around the bush this whole conversation. Let's dive in and talk about some common compensatory strategies that could be useful. And I think one that comes to mind for me first up is repetition. Can you talk to us a little bit about how that could be an effective strategy? And I'm curious if that plays into kind of neuroplasticity as well.
Sure. So we definitely know that the brain can change. The brain can function differently when you give it new strategies, new challenges. So neuroplasticity is definitely at play anytime you're engaging your brain in new and different ways, as we talked about. Repetition is one of them. And I think that how it's helpful is dependent upon where the person is in terms of their cognition. So if somebody has cognitive impairment and they're a little bit earlier in that cognitive impairment, they may be able to use strategies like, you know, a common one we get is, I can't remember anybody's name. They say it to me and then it's gone. And that happens with people who are not cognitively impaired. That's not necessarily a sign of cognitive impairment, but that's a common complaint. I just can't remember names. So repetition, that might be, well, you hear it when the person says, hi, I'm Christy. How are you? Oh, good to meet you, Christy. What do you do for a living? So they've heard the name by the person saying it. They repeat it back to the person. And then the next suggestion would be one or two more times in the conversation, make a point of using their name again. So Christy, where was it you said you work? You use their name. That's a repetition strategy that can be really helpful, because it's just, you've said it, you've given it some context. Now you know the person, you know where they work or what type of work they do. So you've got this little nugget of information about them that helps to kind of seat that in the memory. So that's one way that repetition can be used. Other ways that repetition can be used aren't necessarily all just what we say. So that can be in terms of hearing the information from someone. Okay, so you have an appointment with your neurologist on the 16th of November at 9:00, and it'll be with Dr. So-and-so. You repeat it back. Okay, so let me say that again. November 16th, it'll be at 9:00 and I'm seeing Dr. So-and-so. Is that correct? Yes. Now they write it down in their appointment book or they put it in their phone. And that's a third time that they've seen the information. So there are different ways. It can be hearing it from another person, us saying it back, and then the written repetition of it into a calendar, onto a notepad or something like that. So that's another way that repetition can be used. As we discussed earlier, as someone advances in terms of cognitive impairment, repetition may become ineffective or not effective at all, depending upon the degree of cognitive impairment. So at that point, repeating may not be the way to go. It may be that they just need visual cues in the environment because they're not going to remember it because of the type of cognitive impairment they have.
Thank you for answering that question, Christy. We're so glad that you are here sharing these simple tips, because those are things that we can use on a daily basis. And one of the things that you and Heather talked about and mentioned was neuroplasticity. Can you tell us what that means?
Sure. To be put simply, neuroplasticity is the ability of the brain to kind of the neurons to reroute themselves. So to find new ways for the brain to fire when maybe a particular area isn't as strong any longer. So it's the idea that, for instance, when somebody has a stroke and they have damage in an area that makes it so maybe the left side of their body doesn't work any longer, and you do physical therapy and you do lots of activities, and pretty soon the body can kind of repair itself and make it so that that side of the body is functional again. Similarly, with cognition, you can use strategies to strengthen other parts of the brain so that you can kind of work around those areas that aren't as strong any longer.
Well, thank you for that helpful definition of neuroplasticity, which I think contributes to so many of the strategies that we're talking about, not only repetition, but you take it almost a step further and integrating routine, having a predictable, consistent routine throughout your day, throughout your week, considering the importance of attention and reducing clutter in your environment to help the person avoid overwhelm and overstimulation. I know a passion of yours, Dr. Belden, is technology. Could you talk to us a little bit more about how technology can be an important compensatory strategy?
So I think we've touched on some things that we can do, kind of like using a paper calendar or writing notes, Post-its, things like that. But when we live in a world now where we have so many other more technologically based strategies available to us. So use of Alexa that you already mentioned, it's tricky if you're not familiar with the technology, but once you have it in place, it literally responds to your voice. So you can say, Alexa, remind me to take my medication every morning at 8 a.m. And then you get a reminder from Alexa. There is a beginner's guide, how to use Amazon Alexa on alexaforseniors.net, which is really nice, easily followed kind of instructions, I guess you'd say, for how to use Alexa, if that's something that you want to do. We can use our phone. We have calendars on our phone. Most people have smartphones any longer. We can use the calendar on our phone. We can even use shared calendars. So our family members who maybe aren't even living in the home with us can have a sense of what's going on in the day and help provide reminders. There are notes on our phones. Taking pictures of things is probably an under-recognized or underappreciated way to remember things. You can click a picture of the instructions for something, or you don't want to forget, about the directions to something or something like that. You can take a snapshot of it and save it in your phone. So our phones are a handheld technological resource we have available to us. Pill boxes, the importance of taking our medications as prescribed, I just can't emphasize that enough. So developing strategies for people to be compliant with their medications. If you go to Amazon and type in pill box organizers, the number and types of them that pop up will amaze you. But just as an example, there are pill boxes now that have alarms on them. So you can fill your AM and PM and set the alarm so that you get that reminder. So our pill boxes, there's ways that we can use technology. A simple timer in the kitchen. If you're worried that you're going to walk away and leave that pot on, then you can use that timer to cue you to come back to the kitchen. There are object finders, kind of little electronic key fobs that you can put on your keys or in your purse or whatever that item is that you tend to lose track of. You can hit the remote and it'll beep for you, and you can locate wherever that thing is in your environment. Cameras in the home can be so helpful, for particularly if people are at a distance from their loved one and trying to provide care. You can have cameras around the home at entrances, and then maybe in the living area, so that if you needed to check in on somebody because they're not answering their phone, you can do it that way. So cameras in the home, everything is Wi-Fi capable anymore. So if you're worried that you might forget to lock your door, you can actually get Wi-Fi capable locks that you can actually just get on your phone and check and see if the door is locked when you're gone. So this is just a few of the things that are available anymore, but definitely the use of technology, I think, is going to become more and more prominent in the way that we compensate ourselves and also how we help our loved ones to compensate if they're experiencing any cognitive change.
Christy, thank you so much for sharing about the technology. And before we start to wrap up today, I just have one more question. There are so many brain games out there. Do these really work?
Yes, there are a lot of, there are brain games like Sudoku. There are brain games out there, Wordle, Words with Friends, things like that. There are all kinds of games out there that do exercise our brain. And then there are some programs that are marketed specifically more to cognitive training. And do they work? Well, the research on those particular programs is a little more equivocal. Some findings that it's helpful, some findings that it's not hurting anything, but it may not be very, very effective either. So that's a little more equivocal. A lot of those programs do have a cost associated with them. They're certainly not hurting one's brain to do these things, but there are a lot of ways that are free that don't have cost associated that can also help to exercise the brain. So I would encourage people to find things that they enjoy that stretch them just a bit, not to the point of too much frustration, but stretch the brain a bit, that they enjoy, that they can afford, and that they'll stick to. And that might be one of those purchased programs. Again, the research is more equivocal on their efficacy, but there are lots of other ways that people can exercise their brain outside of those particular programs.
Christy, this has been a really helpful conversation with a lot of kind of simple and actionable steps that we can take. Before we close today, could you give us your final thought when it comes to compensatory strategies for memory and thinking?
Yeah, so I think a final thought would be, one, to give yourself grace. We all have strengths and weaknesses in terms of our memory and thinking abilities, no matter our age. So give yourself a little grace. Be patient with yourself and use compensatory strategies if you need to. There's no shame in it. If you're worried about your brain functioning, if you're worried that there's something going on that is beyond just normal aging, a neuropsychological evaluation is a good way to get a very objective sense of how your brain is functioning, as well as some expert advice on how to compensate for those changes. So you don't have to feel like you have significant cognitive problems to have a neuropsychological evaluation. So that's another recommendation. And then, just maintaining brain health overall is really important. Many of the things that we can do to maintain our brain health are within our control. You know, that's doing the cognitive exercises, doing physical exercise, being physically active as it is safe for you to do so, maintaining social connections with people, maintaining your physical health, lots of things that we can do to contribute to our own brain health. And we should be cognizant of that at any age so that we can age as healthily as we can.
Today, our conversation has been with Dr. Christy Belden, a neuropsychologist, an associate director of Banner Sun Health Research Institute, and the director of the Neuropsychology Center at the Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We so appreciate you helping us untangle compensatory strategies.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure to be here today. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Belden. What a fantastic discussion. And thank you, Heather, for another great conversation. And thank you to you, our listeners, for joining us. If you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.